From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Vladimir Putin is being used to normalize imperialism and to get Hillary Clinton into the Oval Office. So begins this week's column at blackagendareport.com by columnist Margaret Kimberly under her column, Freedom Rider. We discussed it with her via Skype from New York Thursday. Margaret, pleasure to speak with you as always.
Thank you, Don.
So, anti-Putin hysteria in service to Hillary.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yes. Well, there has been for several years now the corporate media campaign that is following directives straight from the administration. And I think it's funny that we, in this country, we're told that they don't refer to the Russian press. They always say the Russian state-run media or the Syrian state-run media.
Right.
Well, we have a state-run media, too.
Right.
And they take orders from whomever is in the White House, and that being Obama. with the attempt to exact regime change in Russia, and that, make no mistake about it, that is the ultimate goal.
Yep.
Of instigating a coup in Ukraine, of putting 30,000 NATO troops on Russia's border, of attempting to overthrow a Russian ally, the Syrian president. As Putin, of course, resists all of these things, he, of course, has to be turned into a bad guy. And I cannot recall any individual leader in my lifetime who was vilified this badly in the American press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the stories run the gamut of, you know, from the sublime to the ridiculous, as the saying goes. So they'll claim he has a mistress who's a gymnast, or Rupert Murdoch's ex-wife is his mistress, even though she says, "I've never met Vladimir Putin." They keep repeating this story. Or, Russia has more icebreakers in the North Pole than any other country. Well, Russia has more ice than any other country. And why would that be a problem, that Russia has more icebreakers anyway? So they jump from story to story. And some of them are laughable, but now Putin is being used in Hillary Clinton's campaign. So when the DNC, Democratic National Committee, emails were hacked and leaked by WikiLeaks, instead of giving attention to the substance of the emails and what they say about the Democratic Party, Putin was used as a diversion. Well, you know, the hacker was Russian. I thought the guy was Romanian, but then they said he was Russian. But then they said, you know, he was a Russian working for Putin. Then it was their Russian digital fingerprints on this hack. I don't even know what that means, if it means anything at all. So she gets to dodge. The press helps her to dodge, her and the Democratic Party, to dodge a bullet with those revelations.
Right.
The fact that she broke the law by using a private server instead of the State Department server in order to cover up the fact that she was doing the business of the Clinton Foundation while she was Secretary of State, we're told that this was all Putin's handiwork. And Donald Trump steps in it by being, it was clear to me, sarcastic and saying he hoped the Russians found all her emails. Well, in the piling on of Trump began,
right,
that he was a Russian agent,
right,
and they wanted
to prosecute him for treason over that.
Yes, there were people saying he committed treason by making a sarcastic remark, but this just shows you the lengths to which the elites in this country are devoted to Hillary Clinton and getting her into office. And so in the past couple of weeks, this has continued. MSNBC, which I call Fox News for Democrats because that's all
right,
it is,
right,
they started piling on. First, Chris Hayes does a story, an interview with a woman named Masha Gessen, who's an alleged journalist, but her I think it's on her W-2 form, Russophobe hack. But at any rate, Joy-Ann Reed did a series. She forgot that the Soviet Union collapsed 25 years ago.
Oops.
She did a series of tweets talking about Comrade Putin and Communist Russia. You know, the very 20th century.
Zyuganov had a coup, huh? I guess Zyuganov pulled off a coup that no one knows about.
I guess so, and calling people Putinite, which, you know, sounds like some kind of a mineral or something.
Kryptonite.
But at any rate, so this is the kind of thing that we have been subjected to. And it's all to further Hillary's campaign.
Yeah, I mean, you talk some of the absurd things. You're talking about an icebreaker gap, for example. It, like, invokes a Dr. Strangelove and a doomsday gap. and I thought when you were running down the list of mistresses that Trump was going to also be named as a mistress of,
Vladimir
Putin, you know? And they could pose him with that shot of Putin with no shirt on or something next to Trump.
Yes, yes, which they keep using over and over and over again. But so you either make fun of Putin or make him a figure of fun and show the pictures of him with his shirt off. I think it's all from the same day, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
many
right,
years
yeah.
ago. But
yeah.
these same photos are reprinted and reprinted and reprinted. And we see the danger of this week in Syria.
Right.
First, the United States bombed Syrian troops, killed, I've heard figures of 60 people, 80 people,
right.
Syrian soldiers killed. And the United States says it was a mistake.
Oops.
Also, in this week's Black Agenda report, Glenn Ford has an excellent piece on why that's obviously a lie,
right.
and that the United States wants to keep this war going so it can be handed over to Hillary. And there's also a dispute in the administration. The Russian UN ambassador said, who's running the show, the White House or the Department of Defense?
That's pretty deep, by the way.
It's very deep, and he must have, and some said Stephen Cohen had said that he would not have made that remark without permission from his boss, from Vladimir Putin, to say something like that.
He's not the Russian permanent representative to the UN. Vitaly Churkin is not given to hyperbole generally. He's a diplomatic professional, and when he said that remark, it really scared the hell out of me. It reminded me of, I mentioned this to Tony Montero and to Mark Sloboda earlier this week. It reminded me of this Cold War movie that was on when Reagan was president, with Rock Hudson as the president and Brian Keith as a sort of a Gorbachev figure, called World War III. and the scene when everything that, this slow building of tensions and mistakes that were marching towards World War III suddenly ran straight for the missiles flying, when the impression was made on Rock Hudson, the U.S. president, that there had been a military coup in the USSR. That was just like, uh-oh, they're coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be the mindset of, you know, at least some part of the Russian elite, if they're going to articulate that at the U.N. at a time when the entire world leadership is assembled at the U.N.
Yes, and we have, you know, and we have Vladimir Putin to thank that we have not had World War III.
Yeah, that's for
because
sure.
It's the United States that has been the aggressor. I mean, imagine if Vladimir Putin instigated a coup in Mexico or Canada,
right
on America's border.
Right. Yeah.
How would that go down in Washington?
Right.
What American president would shrug his shoulders and just say, oh, well, I don't care.
Right.
So we can't imagine that happening. So how is Putin supposed to react when the U.S. does that in Ukraine?
Right, and look at Syria, when they shot, you know, U.S. ally shoots down a Russian plane, killing the pilot. And,
exactly.
You know, and then this. I mean,
yes, absolutely. And the endless provocations in Ukraine, and the things that don't make it into the corporate media,
right.
that after the annexation of Crimea, which was should not have been a surprise to anybody, it is a mostly Russian region. People there have wanted to be part of Russia again. There was some deal with Khrushchev back in the 50s to hand it to Ukraine when there was still a Soviet Union. Russia has a naval base there that they had to protect. So he wasn't going to just let the U.S. Back a coup in Ukraine and not protect his asset. But anyway, since that time, Ukrainian terrorists, there's no other word for them, they blew up generators in Crimea. Crimea had no electricity for several weeks.
That's right.
because of this terrorist act. I mean, it's the right. sort of thing that these Nazis, neo-Nazis in Ukraine have been up to, all with tacit American support. Yeah. I still believe, unfortunately, we've never gotten a real story. I believe that Ukraine was responsible for shooting down yep. the Dutch airline.
Hey, this past weekend, also, you had another provocation in Ukraine. While all this other stuff was going on, I don't know if you caught any of the video, but there was a fireworks attack, essentially. They were called fireworks. Now, if the material that was launched against the Russian embassy in Kiev for about 15 minutes, the barrage of explosives, would have been called a missile attack in Gaza and been retaliated by the IDF with cruise missiles and such against the people of Gaza. But there was this massive fireworks attack on the Russian embassy in Kiev.
I missed that story.
Yeah, scary.
I did not see that. So you have to. We always have to look because we're always being lied to, lies of omission in a case like that where things are not reported. But there was the attack in Syria, and it's pretty clear that the United States, the latest ceasefire, that there's an argument in the administration, and the Defense Department won that argument by bombing the Syrian troops
right.
and killing, in effect, any hope for peace. And this is a lesson, I think, to people on the left, to people who call themselves anti-war, about where we ought to stand with Syria, in regards to Syria. Now, with my column last week, Standing with Syria, people need to stand with Syria's right to sovereignty and stand with Syria when the United States sends in ISIS and uses other forces and is allied with Saudi Arabia and other countries to decide to take out the president of Syria. People need to stop waffling about Assad and stop worrying about being pro-Assad. We must condemn U.S. aggression. And to do anything else just allows it to go unchecked. I mean, they use this right. propaganda for a reason, because they know they can pick people off who don't want to be thought of as being allied with the dictator and have all these various concerns. But it's the United States that has created the humanitarian disaster. It's the United States who is violating human rights in Syria. It is our government that is responsible.
Yep. You know, people talk about the Middle East all the time because of the massive, death and destruction that's been visited on that region by the United States and its allies. That has to be said. It was the United States and its allies that attacked and destroyed Iraq. It was
yeah.
the United States, the U.S. Air Force and its allies that attacked and destroyed Libya. It's the
yeah.
U.S. And its allies backing the terrorists that are destroying Syria. On and on. And it's the U.S. that's supporting the bombing of Yemen, and the U.S. that helped back to protect its naval base, the Saudi takeover and suppression of the people in Bahrain. But Africa is even worse. As we look at the eighth year of AFRICOM entering the African continent, which took place entirely under Barack Obama's watch and was organized by Hillary Clinton, we've had millions of people killed in DR Congo. We've got
yeah.
wars all over, Boko Haram and all these other groups that have risen. We've got dictators like Ouattara in control of Cote d'Ivoire. Just the entire African continent has been lit aflame, and it's a battlefield for big power politics, that a war that's really being conducted by the United States against Africa.
Oh, absolutely. And Congo, I'm trying to find out more about it. There's an uprising now being led by the young people and by students. You can't send money to the Congo this week, I was told.
Right.
The banks have closed down.
Yep.
It's quite a horrible situation, and the United States is responsible for backing Ugandan forces and Rwandan forces and trying to snatch the mineral-rich region of eastern Congo.
Mm.
And this horror has been going on for many years now, more than 6 million people dead, and it's because of the United States. AFRICOM is a entirely American project, where the United States now controls the militaries of many African countries.
35.
Boko Haram would not be as strong as it is if Gaddafi had not been taken out by the United States. So the United States is, you know, people always want to say there are other bad actors in the world. Well, the United States is the worst.
By far.
It's the most powerful. It has created the most chaos, the most destruction, the biggest body count can all be laid at the feet of the United States.
So meanwhile, we're looking at the coordination of this demonization of Putin with the Clinton campaign. And the Clinton campaign, of course, being the campaign of the elites of both the Republican and Democratic parties and the interests which they serve, the ones that are the ones that contribute to the campaign coffers of those parties, the livelihoods of the people involved both inside the parties and the politicians that serve in office. So it appears that there's a unity of opinion, more or less, about the desirability of trying to take down the Russian government, which of course means risking World War III. And that consensus position is represented in Clinton's campaign, and that's not discussed at all in the media here.
No, it isn't at all. Just in one day yesterday, the New York Times had three stories. There were parliamentary elections recently in Russia, and United Russia, which is Putin's party, won apparently overwhelmingly, won very easily. But the New York Times is having this hissy fit because Putin's party won. And they say things like, Putin controls everything. I'm like, I thought it was democracy here. And so they say nothing about the substance of the vote.
Right.
They don't question the election or the electoral process. They just want to, it's just Putin bashing constantly. So it's a humanitarian convoy was bombed, perhaps from the air, perhaps not. So the New York Times headline read, of course, the United States thinks that Russia probably bombed the convoy behind Mr. Putin's easy victory. How a Russian fascist is meddling in America's elections.
Right.
I mean, this was just three stories from one day in the New York Times.
A Russian fascist, yeah.
Yeah, there's some, and it was just such a bizarre story. I couldn't even follow. I mean, because it was made up. It was pulled out of somebody's part of somebody's body. But at any rate, it's the kind of thing we can expect to see in order to make sure that voters don't pay attention to Hillary Clinton's record and get her into the White House. And this mutiny, as Glenn Ford referred to it, between the Department of Defense and the State Department is meant to keep this war going and keep so that Hillary can inherit it and she can do what she dreams of doing and officially have her own war, which is a terribly dangerous thing. But so this is all in service to getting Hillary elected, and the elites are united. I was reading yesterday, Trump is having trouble raising money. He has not raised nearly as much money as any other Republican presidential candidates.
Right.
The big money people are backing Hillary Clinton, Sheldon Adelson, who can be counted on every election cycle to give a lot of money to the Republican presidential campaign, is giving all his money to congressional races. There is Hillary wants a big tent of forces under her control, and it seems everybody's eager to get into that tent. So the corporate media and the big money people are all on her side, and people on the left are being told to be on that side again. Once, and that's not new. Obama won, he was being backed by people who called themselves anti-war and by people like Goldman Sachs. We're all on the same side. So we see this again. Bernie Sanders showing what a phony and a fraud he was by saying this is not the year for protest vote. We must get Hillary Clinton in. So it's a repeat, a sad repeat of what happens with the Democratic Party voters every 4 years, that we're told we can't risk Republican winning. I don't know why Democrats get in and do pretty much the same thing. And Putin is being added to the mix just to make sure that in case anybody starts to think for themselves or ask, should I vote for Hillary Clinton? Just to make sure that those people say, yes, yes, I must.
You know, there's some real, I suffer from some serious cognitive dissonance looking at some of the things that happen. An example, say a David Duke or, you know, some knucklehead that, you know, runs a garage in Alabama, who's got 8 Confederate flags on the wall or something, says, I support Donald Trump. Somehow that's imputed to Trump, that Trump is, you know, in bed with these people because they had a camera pointed at him and said that they support Donald Trump. In the last election and the election before that, Democrats are pointing to people like Mitt Romney and others as the embodiment of evil that have to be defeated at all costs. And you have to take this imperfect Democrat or even this warmongering Democrat or even this Democrat who has assaulted the black community for their whole career, etc., because Mitt Romney is so much more dangerous and worse. John McCain, the same. Now they're in the big tent, the big nasty tent, as Glenn Ford calls it. And they instead are pointing to David Duke and other people who were really of no consequence whatsoever. And yet, the big threat is Trump. And meanwhile, what Trump is saying when he talks about policy is, let's not have World War III. Let's not do regime change anymore. Let's invest in the cities. Let's try to solve the problems that people have. And, you know, for all the malaprops that come out of his mouth and all of the pandering that he does, which is standard fare for the Republican candidates, that speaks to part of their base, that is the great evil that has to be struggled against.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. It would be interesting to see if someone who had more finesse than Trump, who said the same thing, if that person could have electoral success. Trump does say things that he's interesting as a politician because he has something for everyone. The racism first directed against Latinos is not something that should easily be forgotten because it does resonate with many people who are racist. But that's always been the function of the Republican Party for the last 50 years.
Right.
The Republican Party has been the party of white nationalism. Trump is just more blatant about it than other Republicans have been. So he's no worse in that regard. However, and the reason, as I just pointed out, he's having trouble raising money is that he questions some of the basic assumptions that have become orthodoxy in foreign policy, for example, for someone to say no more regime change, for someone to say no more trade deals, for someone to say, I want this party to be the party of working people.
Yeah.
The Democrats don't say that about their party,
right,
which is supposed to be the party of working
right
people.
That's right.
So we have this man who with his own words, has incited some racist people, but you're correct. There is too much attention paid to people who aren't of any consequence. I don't care what Rush Limbaugh says, or what Sarah Palin says, or what Ted Nugent says. They're not in power.
That's
it was
right.
Barack Obama cutting deals with the Republicans.
That's right.
Agreeing to austerity. Getting their buy-in on wars of aggression. There's no reason to pay attention to these people. Now my concern is, about Trump, is there has been an encouragement of racism in his language, and so I worry that people who just sit around waiting for some sort of official permission will act out on their racist beliefs and
right
impulses, and that's always a danger in this
right
country.
Right.
So that is something that I don't think should be dismissed. That's a genuine fear that that black people have, but that's always under the surface.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton, like her, and I'm remembering now when he first ran for president in 1992, and he said, you get two for the price of one. So he and Hillary
right
were going to be like a co-presidential team. And here
right
we are 25 years later, and she's running for president. And so we have to assume this is going to be a replay of the Clinton administration, where black people give 99% of their votes to the Clintons and get what in return? Mass incarceration and into public assistance. So who knows what she'll do. And the Democratic Party, black people are trapped in supporting the whatever party is not the the white people's party, and being totally risk averse, being terrified of doing anything other than supporting the Democrats. And we are signing on again to our own death warrants. And black people will be so much worse off with Hillary Clinton in office. Our political leadership, such as it is, are all on her side. She has no reason, none, to advance an agenda that will help black people. And we're going to be in a terrible condition with Hillary Clinton in the White House.
You know, as well you know, and as many people know, I don't think it's widely known enough, the black folks have been here longer than most white folks, and in a real sense are more quintessentially American than most white ethnics are in a very basic way. In American politics, particularly in the last 50 years or so, but from the beginning, really, deal more in symbolism than in policy. It's just the nature of the mode that is used to distract people from trying to articulate their policy needs, the majority of people. And so we fight over symbolism. And we have, for example, first black president, with great affection from the black community, regardless of his policy, because he's the first black man to occupy the office. We have the symbolism of people like David Duke and others, and those symbols reverberate powerfully given the history of this country. But again, a complete absence of discussion of policy. And what you were talking about with the Clintons, for example, we have actual racist policy that was implemented in a way that Republicans couldn't have done. None of that's been reversed. And now Hillary is poised to build upon that. Meanwhile, she's got all these Republicans who supposedly forced their hand under her tent. I'm assuming they're looking for something in policy and not symbolism as they offer their support.
Yes, she'll be a Republican president. I mean, she will give lip service to issues that are important to Democrats who are bought off so easily that she will get away with it, and Trump being the perfect foil for her. I mean, there are people who say, you know, Bill Clinton talked him into running because he thought it would be easy for her. I don't know if I want to go that far. But he is the perfect foil to help her get away with this. It's easy to just point at Trump and say, racist, racist, racist. But she's also a racist. I don't think he's more racist, frankly, than she is, or Bill Clinton is. But he just says it. So are we going to have undercover racism, or are we going to have blatant racism? That seems to be the choices we're facing. I am not voting for either one of them. I'm going to vote for Jill Stein and the Green Party. And this should be an opportunity for people on the left to stop supporting the Democrats and start building something new, and to take this as an opportunity to replace the Democratic Party, to get rid of it once and for all, and stop engaging in wishful thinking, oh, it would be nice if we had another party, it would be good. Well, you get another party if you build it. And this is an opportunity to do that, assuming we're not all killed by World War III,
right,
instigated by Hillary Clinton.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com entitled Freedom Rider. This week's column, Anti-Putin Hysteria in Service to Hillary. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.